Good evening and welcome to West End United Methodist Church. My name is Reverend Brandon Baxter and I am one of the associate pastors here at West End United Methodist Church. And it is my pleasure to welcome you to this Wednesday night midweek experience that we've been trying this fall as a hybrid experience. So we have a few people in the theater with us tonight and then also some of you participating at home. And each week, we go through a different theme, and these themes rotate throughout the month. So the first Wednesday of the month, second Wednesday, third Wednesday, and fourth Wednesday, we go through Word, Wisdom, Wonder, and Way. And whenever we get to the Wonder section, it's a time for us to think about what are some ways that we can draw closer to God, can open space to draw closer to God. And so a couple of months ago, we had Alan Whitley here who led us through a time of evening prayer or Vespers. And then last month, we had Sally Honor here, and she talked some about some of the different types of spiritual disciplines and works that she's involved in, and also the Tazay services of healing and prayer that we do here at West End. But I thought that for this month, it would be really great for us just to think a little bit how it is that we set spiritual intentions in our own lives. How we personally, individually, and then collectively at times can open space for the Spirit to be at work among us. And so that's a little bit what I want to talk about tonight, especially in this time where it's been a difficult season of life for everyone in one way or another across the course of the last 18 months or so. And I know that I have felt at times more disconnected from God than maybe I would have in normal times, and I have a feeling a lot of other people are that way too. And even amongst our pastoral staff, we've talked about how some of the things that fed our souls pre-pandemic just haven't been cutting it lately, and what can we do to revive that spark inside of us that gets us back in touch with the divine. And so I want us to just think in really simple and accessible ways about how we might involve ourselves in spiritual disciplines. But I want to play a little bit with the word discipline. But first of all, before we get started, I want to invite you, if you're sitting at home, to grab a sheet of paper or something that you can write on and maybe a pencil. And if you like art or you like colors and things like that, if you have something like I got a jar of markers here, if you want to doodle or draw, things like that, there are going to be some times that I invite you to reflect a little bit for a few minutes at a time. And so that might help you during those times of reflection. And I'll play music during those times of reflection as well. But as I think about the word spiritual discipline, the word discipline, of course we want to be disciples, we want to be followers of Jesus Christ and of God and welcome God into our lives. And it is good to be disciplined in a certain way. It's good to have a pattern of life that keeps us in touch with God, with our true selves, and with others in fruitful ways. At the same time, sometimes discipline has a very harsh feel to me. It's like you got to do this, or you got to get this right, or as if you set a perfect plan and then it leads to a goal. And I'm not sure that's how the spiritual life works. It's been my experience that the spiritual life kind of moves in twisting paths, and it's a little more open than that. So while I think the word spiritual discipline is a good one, and it's been used throughout Christian history to describe things we might do, such as anything from prayer to all sorts of other types of ways that we might welcome God into our lives, I'm not sure that discipline is my favorite word. Now, sometimes people will say spiritual practice, and I like the word spiritual practice as well. I like it a little more than discipline in some ways because I think it invites us into thinking about we are actually practicing our faith. We're practicing allowing space for God in our lives. We are working on that. And so I find that to be a more helpful bit of language and framework. And yet, at the same time, still, when I think of practice, sometimes we think that if we practice at something, we get perfect at something. Or if we get perfect at it, then we'll get perfect results. And once again, that can send us down a tricky pathway, I think, when we're thinking about connecting ourselves to God and allowing ourselves to be connected to God is a better way to say that, because God is already connected to us, already reaching out to us. But sometimes we have to create space to experience God. And so I don't like the idea of practicing to get that perfect. And sometimes spiritual practices that we've done for a long time or a season might not meet us in the same way anymore. And so we might need to shift or change or find new ways to encounter the divine. So I like to think first and foremost in terms of spiritual play or spiritual playfulness. And I think if we can think about welcoming God into our lives as an act of play, playing with the divine presence that welcomes us into communion, playing in the midst of other people that we might do life with, playing in the midst of our communities in ways that are fruitful and hopeful and helpful. And so I really like this notion of spiritual playfulness. And there's a book by a professor at Vanderbilt Divinity that I just absolutely love. And you might find it helpful in your own life. It's called A Playful Life, Slowing Down and Seeking Peace. And it's by Jocko Hammon. And he writes this wonderful book about what it is to have a playful spirituality, to accept both the good things about ourselves and the not so good things about ourselves, the good things about the world and the not so good things about the world, and to welcome God into all of that, and to take things seriously but to also hold them lightly at the same time. It's a tricky balance, and that's the tricky balance of the spiritual life. And I love one metaphor he uses in the book. And so I want to open us tonight with setting the stage with this metaphor. He says, the boundless nature of playfulness is beautifully portrayed in the difference between approaching our lives or our life journey as a tourist or as a traveler. And then he sets up these dichotomies where he says, this is kind of what life as a tourist might look like, and this is what life as a traveler might look like. And I want to go through these as quickly as I can. But he starts out by saying a tourist is often worried about being on time with a fixed schedule, right? Everything's got to be in order and in place. And sometimes that's good, but sometimes when we do that, we crowd out the playfulness that allows us to welcome God fully into our midst. And welcome God into the midst of our communities and other people and places. And so he says that to be a traveler is more to experience the moment, to get lost in the moment at times, and to experience something like a sunset or a sunrise. That's a little more of kairos or God time. So that's one way of thinking about play and looking for God. Another thing he says is that tourists look at things, and they look at people, and they look at animals. Think about going to a zoo, and you just, you know, you look through the bars at an animal. But he says that a traveler communes with people and with animals, and I would say even things, the things of the world, that we pay attention to them, and we let them communicate with us, and we listen to what they have to say to us and to teach us. He says that tourists prefer individuality often. They're into their own little thing or the thing that they have planned, and they want to be left alone. But that a traveler seeks the companion of others. What is it to seek out the companionship of others in our journeys? And I'm going to talk in a little bit about how that doesn't always mean other people physically. It might also be kindred spirits that we read or that do work of art that we are interested in or things like that. But who are our companions for this journey? He says a tourist is often worried about getting from point A to point B, whereas a traveler appreciates the journey. It's the getting there. It's the going places, the actual going and experiencing that journey that's important. And if you graft that metaphor onto our lives, isn't that so true that if we get worried about the harried movement from point A to point B, sometimes we miss out on the beautiful gifts that the journey itself has to offer us. And we know that by looking back sometimes on our lives, we realize that that's often been the case. That we look back and we're like, oh, the journey was as important or maybe more important than the destination. He says also tourists might be interested in taking risks or seeking like thrills and sensations. And travelers are more discerning, that they are careful about what it is that they are doing, who it is that they are around, what impact they have on the environment around them. And so it's not just about the individual, but it's about the communal as well. He says that from a tourist mindset, you might pay for a problem-free trip, that everything's going to be perfect and set up just the way you want it. But he says that travelers expect that there are going to be problems, but they can be solved, and there may be adversity along the way. And we know that's true about our lives. Our lives are not perfect. There's always going to be adversity alongside the goodness. And so how do we look for God in the midst of all of that? He says that tourists show disinterest. In other words, they're there to see and witness, but they may not want to be that involved themselves. So it's like, let's say I go to Paris for a day and I see the Eiffel Tower and I'm like, great, that's a cool looking thing. But I learn nothing about the culture or the city. He says a traveler grows in cultural awareness. You might think about this in our own city when I think about a tourist that comes for a day and puts on a cowboy hat and cowboy boots and they think they're a Nashvillian, you know? Well, that's not really what living in Nashville is all about. And so what is it in our life journey to be people that are interested in exploring the experiences around us, the experiences of others, to gain cultural awareness? That's important in our spiritual life. He says that tourists often expect hospitality and great lodging. They expect things to be good. But a traveler knows that the gifts may be strange and the lodgings may not always be what one expects, but that the gift of presence and the gift of hospitality is a gift in and of itself. So what is it to be in hospitable places and to open places of hospitality for others? He says that tourists often want to indulge their behaviors, want to do, again, what they want to do. A traveler may sometimes give up privileges. An example of that might be trying to learn the language that you would use in another country. What would it be to give up the privilege of only using my language, but to use another language? What a true traveler starts to give up a little bit too, starts to negotiate the world and give of themselves and also accept in return. Similarly, he says a tourist, you can think about tourism like exchanging money. It's all transactional. Our spiritual lives can't really be transactional. In our spiritual journeys, in our spiritual life, it's more about exchanging lives and experiences and presence. I think this is one of the things we've most missed during the pandemic in our life as a church. It's great to be able to do things like this online, but to not be able to be with one another and share life has been hard at times, and so I hope a lot of that returns as we move out of this time. He says a tourist does things constantly, is always on task, but that a traveler is more relaxed. A traveler sits back a little bit and pays attention to the world around them. He says a tourist might want an all-inclusive location. I've got it all right here. We might want that in our spiritual lives. I want to have the perfect formula for how I connect with God. But that's not really how it works. A traveler seeks the road less traveled and explores, tries to figure out what it is that's going on out there in the world. And I think it's similar in our spiritual lives. We have to explore, and we may find God in places that are very surprising to us. And he also says sometimes tourists might change their appearance. Maybe they take on temporarily the garb of where they are or something else. Or maybe you go somewhere to get tan or something else like that. But he says that a traveler is about transformation of the heart and soul. And I think certainly in our spiritual lives, if we're just worried about the outer image of who we are, that we're not doing that deeper soul work of allowing our hearts and minds to be transformed and our souls to be transformed by God and by others. And finally, he says a tourist mindset is sort of like having religion without being religious. And so maybe you go through the motions of religion and yet it doesn't really impact the soul. And yet a traveler is someone who is religious with or without having religion. And so maybe our spiritual journey takes us through a community of faith, such as West End United Methodist Church. Maybe our journey takes us outside of the faith home that we thought it would be in. And yet, and it might not be a faith space at all, it might be some other kind of place. And yet, if we truly believe that God is who God is and that the divine is present with us, that God will be there with us in those moments. And so, as I think about this, I really want you to think about setting spiritual intentions with playfulness and openness to the Spirit of God. And so what I'm going to invite you to do in a minute is to think about some of the basic, simple aspects of what it might mean for you personally to set some new intentions around opening space for God. I'm not going to provide a formula. What I'm going to do is suggest that there are a few things to keep in mind, a few elements of spiritual exploration to keep in mind, that then you can shape and play with and explore in whatever ways might work for you or might work for communities that you're in or groups that you're in. But it's good to be able to think intentionally about these things and to play with them intentionally and yet to combine them in all sorts of fruitful ways. I'm thinking specifically about like the spaces we go to look for God. The kinds of tools we use and toys that we play with. We'll talk about that for a minute. The times that we do that. What works for us? And what makes sense? And where does God meet us? Because we're all unique individuals. And there are many good practices out there, but different ones work for different people. So first I want us to think a few minutes about place and space. When I think about place and space, there are a few things that I think about. A lot of people like to create an altar or some kind of space or place in their home that is easily accessible, that's visible to them, that reminds them of the presence of God in their lives. For me, I have this on a bookshelf at home, and I keep photos of some of my loved ones from the past. I keep books, several books of prayers that are important to me, and books of poetry and even fiction that I come back to time and again. And I keep little chimes and other things on there that help me maybe sit down and have a moment with God. And I may not do that for months at a time, but that space is always there beckoning me. And sometimes I notice it and I sit down and take a moment. Some people like to get out into nature. Nature is beautiful, God's creation. You know, you meet the presence of God there. In fact, some people talk about the earth as being almost like the body of God. And so many people find that they connect to God in special ways when they get out into nature. That's been especially important during this time where we've been inside a lot more in the last year. Think about other special locations in your life that open you to God or to yourself or to others. Maybe it's the coffee shop where you know, you like to meet and greet people and spend time in fruitful conversation, communing with one another. Maybe you're a reader and it's a place like a library and that's where you find calm and peace and sustenance. It could be all sorts of different kinds of places. They don't have to be quiet places either. And again, thinking about that metaphor of being a traveler, it might be travel in and of itself. Maybe there are places that resonate with you or places that you like to go that are important that you haven't been to in a long time, or maybe somewhere you've needed to go that you feel you're being called to. What are those places? So I'm going to invite you for a few minutes to think about what kinds of places and spaces might feed your soul, might open up space for you in relationship to God and to others. So I'm going to play a little music here. I'm going to give you about 2 minutes to think about that. And just to reflect on that, and if it helps to write them down, write them down. If it helps to doodle, doodle. And then we'll come back and we'll look at the next point I want to think about. Thank you. So now that you've thought about some of the places and spaces, I want you to think about some of the toys. I'm going to call them toys because I like thinking about play, but you might think of them as tools or spiritual tools that you might use in your time of play. There are a lot of different things people use. I'm just going to mention a few examples here. One, some people like words. You know, they like to have books or poetry or scripture or prayers or liturgy. Sometimes when we don't know what to pray or we don't know what to say, the words of others help us do that. And so I think for many of us, that can be one of the things we might reach for. Some of us, however, might like to write or might like to draw or paint or do something else with art. And so maybe it's writing utensils, paper. Maybe it's canvas and paintbrushes. Maybe it's all sorts of different kinds of things that allow you to get out of your head and into your heart and then get that stuff that's in your heart out in some way that you can reflect on it and see it. Maybe it's through music. Sound is important for some people. Maybe there's certain types of music that resonate with your soul. Maybe chimes. I said I like to keep chimes on my altar. I have these little bells that are shaped like hearts. I wanted to bring one to show you, but then I realized we're renovating our house right now, so my little altar is taken apart, and I have no idea where my chimes are at the moment. So I can't wait to get my little space back. But I like to ring them sometimes. Just that little tinkling sound reminds me of the still small presence of God in my life and in the world around me. Candles. I have a candle lit here. It reminds us of the light of God in our midst. We know that people have lit candles throughout the ages as a sign of God's presence. Fragrant oils and incenses might help for some people. All of those things. And you can probably think of a lot of other things. I put camera up here. Sometimes we all carry a camera now. I use my camera to pay attention to the world. If I have time at the end, I'm going to show you for a brief moment an example of my playfulness that I did with my camera a week or so ago during one of my quiet times with God. But there can be all sorts of different tools, and you can probably think of some that I haven't named that are things that might help you connect with God or connect with others, connect with this world. And so I want you to spend a moment to think about and brainstorm what are some of those tools, those toys. And I'm going to give you a minute or two again to do that and either write or draw or whatever feeds your soul right now as you think about what are those things that work well for you. Thank you. Next, I want us to think a little bit about our posture or our practices, what we do with our bodies. There are all sorts of different ways that bodies have been used to praise God and to welcome the presence of God. And there are many ways we use our bodies in worship, in times of prayer. And there is no right way to use our bodies to worship God. And yet, our embodiment is a part of who we are, and it's a part of how we're wonderfully created. And so I think it's important to think about what we do with our bodies. Sometimes in this busy world, we need stillness and silence. And so sometimes it's calming our bodies. It's trying to find a place of relaxation and stillness and quiet. Sometimes it can be different kinds of postures that might be comfortable to us. If one of our tools is reading, maybe we have a comfortable chair in which we sit that really holds us in comfort. Maybe there are ways that we lie down or kneel when we pray, all sorts of different positions we might put our body in. Some of us may not like stillness or even quietness, and it might be better to get out and walk or to move in some way. Walking meditatively with intention, paying attention to the world around us and really thinking I'm looking out for where God's peeking out at me from the world today can be a powerful posture or practice. And then some people really need a lot of exercise and physical play that brings life and renewal. I think we all need that sometimes, and some of us need more of that than others. And so maybe for some of you, part of your spiritual practice is doing some of those things, getting connected to a team that plays dodgeball, I don't know, all sorts of different things. So imagine for a minute, what are some of the postures and practices that might speak to you in your spiritual life? Think about what it is that your soul yearns for right now in this moment. And it might be more on the stillness side. It might be more on the active side. But what is it that God is saying to you about posture and practice in this time? I'm going to give you just a moment again to think about that. Going to move us on to times and seasons. So we have place, we have our toys or our tools, we have postures and practices that feed us, and then times and seasons. So think about what times are natural points to focus on God and on the world and on others and on yourself. And when I say what are natural points, I mean natural for you. What times work for you and speak to you? Some people are morning people. Some people are evening people. Not everybody's going to find sustenance in waking up at 5 in the morning to read Scripture. And yet I know some people that feeds their souls mightily. Other people, it might be something totally different. And it might have to do a different time. So are there daily times, either in the mornings or the midday or in the evenings, that might work for you? Are there weekly times? Maybe it's a rhythm of once a week that kind of works for you and that maybe feels natural to build into your life. days that might work best in the middle of the week? Are there seasons of the year that are special to you, that are good times to refocus on God and refocus on the presence of the divine in your life? Of course, we're coming up on the Advent season. That's a time when a lot of people reach for devotional materials and other things that might draw them a little bit closer to God again in a way that they have been missing. And also think about the season of your life. What fits this season of life that you're in? What worked for me as a young adult might not work for me now that I have children that are in middle school, right? And it might not work the same as when I'm older. And so this journey of faith that I'm on and this journey of life in the presence of God that I'm on, I need to think about what works in this season of my life at this time. And there may be other times or seasons that you think of that are important. So I want you to spend a moment to think about what are your times and seasons right now. What are times that either you do find yourself having a moment to connect with God in a deeper way, or maybe that you haven't been, but maybe that might work for you? What season of life are you in, and what does that speak to you right now? Reflect on that just for a moment. Finally, I want us to think about companions on our journey. And as I said before, sometimes companions might be friends and confidants, people that we do life together with, also family I didn't put on there, but it could be that as well. It might be pets, the animals in our lives that bring joy in presence of a different kind. It might be a faith community of some sort. Hopefully many of you find that here at West End United Methodist. Maybe it's activity and interest groups that you haven't been involved in a while that you need to get reconnected to, or something new that maybe is an opportunity that might build new relationships and open you to something new in your life. Sometimes it's welcoming the presence of our ancestors, or remembering our past, or the past of the place in which we live and work. Maybe it's writers or speakers or podcasters or other kindred souls that speak to us. Maybe those are our companions. Maybe it's creatures that are out in nature or nature itself. And I'm sure there are others as well. So I want to invite you to reflect just for a minute. Who or what are some of the companions on this journey with you in this life together with God? Now, of course, I've only given you a few moments tonight to think about this stuff, but I hope you'll take this and maybe spend some more time with it, thinking about place and space, thinking about toys and tools, thinking about postures and practices, thinking about seasons of the year, seasons of life, seasons of the week, thinking about the companions that journey with you. And then I want you to think about how you combine those things that feed your soul playfully. How do you start to welcome God and the presence of God into your life in and through all of these things? I think there are a few things I want you to remember. You can keep it simple. It doesn't have to be complicated, right? These can be simple things. It doesn't have to be perfect. Always make sure these things are a part of your surroundings, you know. Make these things accessible, like that altar space I have, that it beckons me to come and engage it, you know. How do you make sure that you are building out your surroundings and paying attention to your surroundings in ways that allow you to always be engaged with God? And think about being synchronized, being in time with the moment in your life, with what works for you, and also with what God might be speaking into your life in this moment. And finally, always, always, always engage the senses. Seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, hearing. As we think about encountering life in its fullness, when we engage the senses in these ways through practices and through play, and by welcoming God to be present in all of those things, we find new dimensions of life that we may not have realized were there, and we find new dimensions of God as well. So always engage the senses. Now, I wanted to share really briefly one example of a spiritual play from my own experience. So I broke it down here as I think about these. I went on an autumn stroll last week, and I did that in the outdoors, and I strolled through the neighborhood I'm living in right now. It's not my neighborhood, but it's my parents' neighborhood, because we're staying there while our house is being renovated, like I said. And they have this beautiful wooded neighborhood, and so I walked through there, and some of my toys and tools that day were my headphones and music that I was listening to, and the camera on my phone. And I planned to walk and pay attention to what was going on in the world around me. It was a beautiful Friday afternoon. I had the day off. Ministers usually take Fridays or Thursdays off, and so I was off on Friday, and it was afternoon in the autumn time. And my companions that day ended up being my memories of some of the people that used to live around me in that neighborhood when I was growing up there, but also even people that lived in that area in the distant past. And then also some of my other companions were the yellowing plants and trees, the shadows and the sun. And as I walked, I took my camera, and my camera helped me pay attention to what was going on. And I snapped this picture of the road, and I thought about myself walking along and journeying through my life that I'd lived in this space for so long. At different points in my life, and thinking about how God had been at work in my life. I took this beautiful picture of the yellowing fields in the background behind this old stone wall that is from the Civil War era, and I imagined the past and all the strife that had gone on in this place at one time, probably, and then also all of the beautiful lives that had unfolded for generations before I ever grew up in this space. I saw the yellowing of the leaves, and I was reminded of the seasons and the ways that death leads to life again. It reminded me of the rhythms of life and the promise of the faith that I believe in God, that there is something beyond that waits for us and beckons us and promises to be there. I looked at the beautiful hills and was reminded of the immensity of God in the immensity of this creation, and that I am just one little piece of this giant world. I thought of the verse in Scripture where it says that a grain must fall in order for new life to take place, and I saw these weeds and stalks growing up here in the midst of everything dying off in the fall, and I thought about that. And then I saw the beautiful sun shining through on this day that was going to end much shorter, and that even though the darkness was creeping in, that the light of God was there in my midst. And so I had these companions for my journey. I had an openness to the world around me. And really, at least for the rest of that day and for a little bit of that week, my soul was more alive again. So I want to invite you to go and play. Figure out what it is that God is beckoning you to, what it is that will work for you. And I invite you to be playful in your spirituality. And I hope that you meet God in that play, because God has already met you exactly where you are and continues to want to be in relationship with you and with others and with this world. I invite you to go in peace this evening, and I want you to join us next week. We're going to have a guest, Allie Kaler, who is going to be here. She's a divinity student who's going to teach us a little bit about the art of activism. And that will be online only. We won't have that in person next week, but it will be online for you to watch. Have a great evening, and I look forward to seeing you soon.